The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Can the Los Angeles Rams solve the Bill Belichick riddle this time? Oh, the Rams got a defense better than the defense that Belichick faced in the Super Bowl. And Jared Goff is coming off a good performance. Remember, McVay called him out a couple weeks ago, kept turning the ball over. Goff, you know, like all these guys, Wentz, Dak, Goff, they're supposed to be in their prime now. No more kids' gloves, right? And I apologize to the person who had the article, I don't remember even when it was, several days ago at least, about Jared Goff and McVay taking off the kids' gloves, or I would cite them. But it's true. McVay was like, look, man, you can't be turning the ball over. He said it in the press. And to Jared Goff's credit, he cleaned it up and he's coming off a good performance. But Goff, look, Goff is not an elite quarterback. He looked for a minute the year they went to the Super Bowl like he was. He threw a pretty spiral, boy. It came out of his hand nice. And when he had the play action going with Todd Gurley, he looked like a great quarterback for a while, but he did not sustain it. He's a good quarterback. He is better than just a starter. He's an upper-middle-class quarterback. You know, top 50 percentile, but not much more than that. Is that good enough to beat Bill Belichick? This ain't Cliff Kingsbury. It's Bill Belichick. Let me tell you something about Bill Belichick. Whatever you want to say about the Chargers and Anthony Lynn, and Warren Sharp was on this show talking about that was a mismatch in coaching, the biggest one you could get, the best coach versus the worst coach, although Adam Gase may have something to say about that. But it was 45-0. And yeah, special teams was great for the Patriots. I get it. 45-0. So what does that mean? Does that mean if Belichick had the Chargers roster, since they're more talented than the Patriots roster, he'd win 90-0? What's the point spread on that one? Belichick he's the Floyd Mayweather of coaches. Floyd used to say, you better not make no mistakes. Not that Floyd was perfect, but he made fewer mistakes than the other guy, and he'd punish you for your mistakes. And that is Bill Belichick. He is going to punish the Los Angeles Rams, and especially Jared Goff, for any mistakes. And you know something about the New England pass defense? It's 27th in the league in net yards per pass attempt allowed. Don't let that fool you, because they don't pressure the quarterback, but they haven't done that in a long time. They're 24th in sack rate this season, the Patriots. But, and like, that's how you make Jared Goff look bad, right? Like, you put pressure on him. Most quarterbacks put pressure on him. But that's not really telling the whole story with the Patriots. The Patriots and Bill Belichick, you know who the coaches who fall by the wayside are? The Mike McCarthys. They can't adapt to the times. They can't adjust. You know, Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl once upon a time, so he's good. He was good. Not great, but good. But he lost his job with Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback. How do you do that? The great ones adjust. Mike McCarthy never did. Oh, now I understand analytics. Oh, no, you don't. Day late and a dollar short. No, the great ones adjust. Andy Reid, Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick. By the way, McVay has adjusted in his young career. Came out, took the league by storm. The league made certain adjustments. He's adjusted back. But the Patriots are not a pressure-the-quarterback kind of defense, because the league has gone from, as much as I still love having a great offensive line, and I really think that's what it's all about, but the league has gone so heavy into the passing game, right? Constantly the rules changes, reward passing. And constantly coaches have adjusted to that, because that's what the fans want to see, scoring. And as a result, you have all-time great defenses where the secondary is really doing its job in a way that's not always obvious. It's not from a bunch of turnovers and stuff. It's because they cover well. They can do other things that aren't as flashy. But that's been the Patriots in recent years. And that's been the Patriots recently, quiet as kept. Big part of their recent success is that whatever statistics you hear about their secondary, recently the secondary's played well. Very well, in fact. Gilmore's gotten back. Now he's really maybe back to what he was. They're missing Chung since the preseason because of COVID, but that's it. Because he opted out, but that's it. And Hightower up front. But the secondary's been playing well. And so what does that mean? Well, look, L.A., has maybe the best defense in the NFC. You could easily argue it. It looks like the Bears or the Rams have the most upside because they have special impact players. And so when you talk about the defense against the pass, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, are you kidding? The best defensive tackle who ever lived. I love me some, you know, Mean Joe Green, and you could talk about whoever you want. You know, Warren Sapp or whoever you want, like the famous guys from the past. Aaron Donald's better than those dudes. Let's be honest. Aaron Donald's the best defensive tackle who ever lived. If you're talking about your all-time team on defense, Lawrence Taylor's your first pick at linebacker. Deion Sanders probably going second at corner. Who's your number three pick? It's either going to be Reggie White or Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt from a couple years ago. He's got to be in there. You know, or Ray Lewis, like you got to, but Aaron Donald's right there, just about as good as anyone who's ever lived. And Jalen Ramsey is just about as good a guy in your secondary as exists in the NFL right now. So they have high-end, you know, special high-end potential. Here's the thing, though. Do the Patriots make their living passing the ball? Nah. Cam Newton passed for 69 yards and won a game last week. Cam Newton's going to have twice as many rushing touchdowns as passing touchdowns at quarterback for a team that's not only 6-6, but really is two plays away from being 8-4. A team that's beaten Miami, that's beaten the Raiders, that's beaten Arizona, that's beaten Baltimore, and came a play away from beating Seattle and a play away from beating Buffalo. I have bad news, LA. I think you're on upset alert right now. I think the Patriots on the road get this done. They're one of the hottest teams in football on the low. Meantime, New York City, boy, the laughingstock of the NFL for so long. The Jets, of course, the Jets are... Listen, every city with two franchises, generally you have the heritage franchise, the Yankees, and the clown franchise, the Mets. The heritage franchise, the Lakers, and the clown franchise, the Clippers, right? This is the way it works. And sometimes the Clippers or the Mets can come up in the world, but they're going right back down. But the Yankees and the Lakers, even when they go through bad periods, those are the greatest franchises in the history of their sports. And it works in other towns. So you have two franchises. A lot of times it's the heritage franchise, the clown franchise. Here's the problem with New York football recently. The clown franchise is the Jets, and let's look at how many wins they have. Sure enough, no wins for the Jets. Zero. But the heritage franchise, the Giants, they're supposed to hold it down. Been a long time since 2011, and I've been killing Gettleman. And by the way, it shouldn't take 3 years to maybe get to 500 next year, right? However, let's give credit where credit's due. Blake Martinez... You know, you have guys, Jabril Peppers, you have guys who are balling. I know Martinez is hurt recently, but you have guys who are balling on the defense, and Joe Judge, so far, is trending in the right direction. That looks like an excellent hire. That looks like the kind of a Mike Tomlin hire. When the Steelers hired Tomlin, you said, really, Tomlin? Really, Joe Judge? He hasn't even been a coordinator, but he must have just wowed them in the meeting, and you can see why. It's one thing to be a tough guy to your team and to your coaches, right? To your players and coaches. Oh, you're running laps and the coaches are going to have to run laps. That's going to backfire if you don't have real credibility, which Joe Judge didn't yet have. In order to get them to buy in when you're doing that kind of stuff, pulling those stunts, they have to feel it's not a stunt. The players and coaches on the staff, they need to feel that this guy knows what he's doing. He's putting us in positions to win. It's not just histrionics. And that's what Joe Judge has done. So guess what, New York football? The New York football Giants just bounced the Dallas Cowboys off of Sunday Night Football next week. December 20th, the Giants have been flexed to Sunday Night Football. Giants-Browns, Sunday Night Football. This is a 5-7 team, but it's undeniable what's happening. They beat the Seahawks. They didn't give them a tough game and won a moral victory. They beat Seattle. That's a hellified defense. And they're doing it without Saquon Barkley this entire year. Who, like, talk about the greatest prospects ever. Saquon Barkley is the greatest running back prospect of all time. Prospect. Like, when you saw him, you said, okay, he's 235 pounds. He's like a real big running back. And he's also faster than even the small running backs. And he also works harder than everybody, right? And he can also catch passes. And he can also stop and start on a dime like Barry Sanders. He's been out all year. And Daniel Jones looked like a reach at number six. Maybe it still was. We have to see. Daniel Jones winds up just an average starter. That's not good enough. But he's trending to be a little better than that already, and he hasn't been around. They did this with Colt McCoy, Giants fans. And obviously, the Browns have been very good this year. They've been a lot of hoopla around the Browns. But Giants fans, the Giants and Browns just flexed. They flexed, literally, the Cowboys-Niners off of Sunday Night Football. Marcus Spears joins me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. What's going on, Swagoo?
What's up, Mac? Kel? What's up?
Pretty soon, I have to decide if I owe Gettleman an apology. I say no right now, but we're gonna see pretty soon. Giants are trending in the right direction, Marcus.
It's trending that direction where you're gonna have to apologize. Me too, though.
Oh yeah, you too. Damn, I hate doing that.
Yeah, it's all good. We wrong sometimes. It's cool, man.
No,
it's everybody,
not.
Everybody Marcus, can't get it right. That. That's why they keep it 90, and I say keep it 100 because
right,
I'm always right.
No, I keep it 90, but it's not that. What I really hate about Gettleman more than anything is the stupid way he says quarterback. God, that bothers me as a New Yorker. General manager with that stupid Boston accent. Quarterback. What the hell is a quarterback? You ever seen one?
No, I never heard of it. First time ever hearing of it, to be honest with you.
Marcus, you were like, saying
this
that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
This is a good job. This is a nice job by Gettleman so far, man.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see where
it
goes.
I gotta admit it.
Yeah, in the meantime, you've been saying Dak should not want to go back to the Cowboys. What is this about?
It's about trajectory of that franchise, man. Right. And also the way this situation is played out. Max, everybody keep talking about the money and the numbers. I saw you this morning on First Take. The sticking point was the years. And Dak and his team – now, well, Jerry's going to be right all the time in any situation because he's already the billionaire. It's easy for us to say that. Like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, this works out for Jerry. And this is, yeah, it's always going to work out for Jerry. It's going to also work out for the 31 other owners in the league because they don't need a contract from anybody. But I'm just thinking about Dak's position and – how this whole thing is played out. And this is something I've been thinking about for a while. Like, and when I say a while, like a couple months, even when he was playing, and I'm looking at this team and I'm trying to figure out, like, where are they going? And then the more and more I see Mike McCarthy and I see Nolan on the defensive side of the football, I'm like, this team has no – there's no direction. Like, if I was to ask you, where are the Cowboys trending right now, Max, what would you say?
I would
another,
say
– they're going to be looking for another coach?
But I would say this, Marcus, I would say this. Jerry is and Steven are a tick above average as GMs, which is saying a lot because, as you said, he's a billionaire. He owns the team. He bought a shiny toy, and he gets to play with it. Very unlikely that some dude who just fancies himself a GM can average 8.5 wins a game over 10 years, right? So he and his son are doing a better job than they ought to be doing. Still in all, it's not the same as going out and hiring a great GM. So he hasn't done that. And the reason
Max,
I think
on,
that...
Hold on uh-huh. 1 second. Let me address what you said about 8-8, okay?
Yeah.
And I get it. I understand it when you say a tick above average GM. Do you know Bill O'Brien went to the playoffs 2 out of the last 3 years with the Houston Texans?
Yep.
He fired, Max.
But hold on.
He's gone.
But he
for
was...
some of the decisions he made.
This is the problem with Bill O'Brien. Not as a coach, I agree. He's supposed to be a quarterback whisperer, all that, and he's lucky he had Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson made him look better than he ought to have looked, right? But at the same time,
absolutely.
Bill O'Brien didn't get fired for being a bad coach. He got fired for being a bad GM. Like, the best thing he could have done was fire himself as GM,
Max,
right?
Me,
that was the reason he got fired. Dude, he traded DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson.
I know, but let me ask you this. Yeah. Outside of the Dallas Cowboys drafting the offensive line, who granted has been decimated by injury.
Yeah.
They took Zeke. They took Dak in the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
They've drafted well, and I'm gonna be 100% honest with you. Like Jerry and Steven are going to ultimately have the final say and they're going to be the ones at the forefront for when you draft well. A lot of that is Will McClay. Now, I know a lot of people don't know Will McClay, but he's the head of scouting for the Dallas Cowboys. A lot of that has been identified. A lot of the things that have happened and transpired in that organization have been identified by Will McClay. Now, that is no there is no intention for me to take away. I think Steven is going to be a great owner. And I actually believe Steven, at some point when he takes over, will hire a GM. I don't think Steven is going to want to be the GM. Now, I could be 100% wrong. He may want to do exactly how Jerry did it and is doing it, but it may not be the case when Steven is ultimately the owner of that team.
But do you understand that Jerry Jones may never die? You realize that? Jerry Jones got
here. He might not.
He is the Earth's oldest living mammal. We know that. That's been scientifically proven. He's over 200 years old easily. Take a look at the guy. So, like, he's probably going to outlive Steven. He's going to outlive all of us. I wouldn't look forward to a world without Jerry Jones as Cowboys owner, Marcus. Let me ask you this.
Go ahead, man.
Because we just put it up on the screen on ESPN Plus, which I suggest if you're not subscribed to ESPN Plus, I'm not just doing this because I work for the company, y'all. Like, I'm just telling you. There's no better bang for your entertainment buck anywhere. Marcus, I'm going to do a quick commercial for it, kind of. Like, I just got to tell you, I have a friend who subscribed to ESPN Plus because they wanted to watch this radio show, right? They're like, all right, I'm going to subscribe to it. He's like, Max, did you know Joe Montana does a details about this game they played against the Eagles from God knows what? Like, you have no idea the fights that are on there. It's too much content. You know what? Don't subscribe to ESPN Plus because you won't see your family anymore. You're just going to go down a rabbit hole. But anyway, we had up on the screen the FPI, the chances of winning the NFC East. Giants are number one right now, 57% likely to win the division. You think the Giants, because it looks like it's Giants or Washington, who do you think wins the NFC East?
If you ask me that question, I think it would be the Washington football team.
Why?
I love the way the Giants are playing. I didn't know how Joe Judge would be received. And you remember us sitting in the studio in New York talking about him making guys run and, you know, all of these new things he was trying to implement. And I was like, if these guys don't fully buy into that, they're going to have some issues. But seems like the Giants have. And it's a young, impressionable team. I remember, I think it was Logan Ryan talking about how much he felt like Joe Judge and the coaching staff love these guys, and it mattered to them about who they were off the field. When I think it was Logan Ryan who wife went through something, almost near death experience. But when I start seeing and hearing and all of that stuff start transpiring, and then you see the way this team is playing, love the direction. But
yeah, you can see the way guys around. Like I mentioned Blake Martinez, Leonard Williams, Jabril Peppers. These are guys. A lot of teams have guys like that. They're like, they're talented. Is the coach going to put them in the right position? It's not like there's no Aaron Donald or Jalen Ramsey who no matter where they are, they're going to ball, right? And he has. Joe Judge has put these guys in the right position. And when his D coordinator thought that he was the boss, Joe Judge said, take a hike.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked.
Yeah, 100%. Like, he's done really, really good things. Even, like, Max, I got to say, even hiring Jason Garrett as an offensive coordinator. Yep. Like, that was Colt McCoy that beat the Seattle Seahawks.
Yep. That wasn't
Daniel Jones, right? So to be able to implement that plan and execute it successfully, and you see what the defense is doing, kudos to the Giants for sure. They playing great, and they should be where they are right now because they challenge. Look, if Daniel Jones hits three passes against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they win that game.
Saquon come back healthy next year with a healthy Daniel Jones. They got this division.
But
if that
right
happens,
now,
they got the division.
I say Washington football team because I believe that Alex Smith is the difference between both of these teams.
Right, until Daniel Jones gets back at least.
That.
Yeah. All right. The great Marcus Spears, ladies and gentlemen. Check him out on NFL Live. That is a fun program. Fun and informative. Orlovsky and Marcus and Mina Kimes. And you get Ryan Clark in there. That's a great show. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Is there a new team on James Harden's wish list? Find out who next.
Max. the podcast.
James Harden is gone. You can reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Before we even get the last take, which is sometimes your take, we may do an Axe Max segment, get to some calls. 888-SAY-ESPN. So there's a new team on James Harden's list, is there? Well, according to The Athletic, Shams Charania, I apologize for butchering that person's name, the former MVP, James Harden, has the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat at the top of his list of teams he'd want the Rockets to trade him to. Now, personally, I don't believe anything until I hear Adrian Wojnarowski say it. Then I believe it. Then it's as good as fact. And the fact of the matter is, what do the Milwaukee Bucks have to trade for James Harden? Theoretically, you could flip Drew Holiday, who you just traded for, and Chris Middleton, who's Giannis's boy, into assets attractive to the Rockets and then bring in James Harden. Would I do that? Yeah, I would. Giannis needs a great big, as I keep saying, needs a great non-big, just as great as him, to win. Penny Hardaway in his prime was not enough for Shaq. Not good enough. Kobe Bryant in his prime was. Dwayne Wade in his prime was, but that's it. Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson were good enough to win championships with Kareem. Kareem never got any, not even a single one without them. That's how it goes. What about Hakeem Olajuwon? Olajuwon got one when Jordan took a two-year hiatus from the NBA and Hakeem faced another team with a big in Patrick Ewing who didn't have another great player with him. Meantime, Hakeem also had, you know, a rookie Sam Cassell and Robert Horry, and he had Kenny Anderson. He had a really good team. But the point is, Giannis needs an elite player who can handle the ball and make plays and shoot from the outside and all that stuff, and that's James Harden. But how do you get him? Meantime, James Harden needs six consecutive negative tests to return to the Rockets, according to ESPN's Tim McMahon. If he continues testing negative, Harden could be cleared to practice Monday. Harden did not report to the Toyota Center for COVID-19 testing until Tuesday, 2 days after the Rockets held their first team practice. You know, a lot of people are thinking he's heading to the Nets because that's his preferred destination, right? Is that a great fit on the Brooklyn Nets? Two ball stoppers, Harden and Kyrie, with a KD coming back from an Achilles? You know how many people have ever come back from an Achilles? Breonna Stewart? Who else? Almost no one ever does it. Seattle Storm. She did it. Made a full recovery. Was great again. Won MVP. The whole thing. They won the finals. MVP of the finals. But who does it? Like so few. Dominique Wilkins way back in the day. He was never really neat again. Not really the human highlight reel again. But he was really good. It's hard to come back from this injury as the same player. So then you have KD coming back, right? And then a lot of times, even if you can do that, it's not the next year. It's the following year that you get back to being yourself. So let's just assume a diminished KD. Let's say he's 80% of himself, which I think is optimistic. So start thinking of him more like a Paul George-level player than a KD-level player. Kyrie Irving already has put all this scrutiny on Kevin Durant because he releases one of his stupid statements saying, I'm not going to, the world has changed, and so I am going to be positivity evolved, ambiguous statement, but the upshot is I'm not taking questions. Right? So what does that mean? Is that leadership? You know, I was in L.A. for 6 years when Kobe was there. Kobe never ducked the media. Kobe was front and center taking questions, absorbing it all, deflecting it from his teammates so they didn't have to deal with it as much. Kyrie is like, no, don't talk to me. Talk to that dude. So now Kevin Durant has to deal with all this. Kyrie's a team cancer. Always has been. I wish it weren't true because Kyrie is my... I love Westbrook because Westbrook's just all out all the time. But Kyrie, if you had to say who's the best show in the NBA, look, I think Kyrie is the best show in the NBA. A single player who puts on the best show. His handles are so fun to watch. He can bomb from the outside. He can score in the paint. He's a great passer when he wants to be. Like, Kyrie can do everything. Except get along with his teammates and lead. So now everyone's looking at KD. Kyrie's already starting trouble. And Kyrie also over dribbles. He's a ball stopper, as is Harden. How does that work with Harden in Brooklyn? Now, sometimes you stack the talent so high, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. But understand the expectations would be sky high. Meantime, Philly. You see, like, when you join a team with Kyrie and KD already on it, if you win a championship, people are just going to say, well, yeah, you're supposed to. And if you don't, boy, oh, there's a lot of downside there. But if you go to a place like Philly, particularly if they have to give up Simmons to get you, and people are like, well, they only win a championship if their stars really play great, then you get all the credit in the world. And by the way, Harden and Embiid seem to match up better, like together, than Kyrie and KD and Harden. Richard Jefferson, speaking of the Harden situation, ESPN NBA analyst, of course, was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin in the morning, had this to say about Harden's situation.
This doesn't look pretty for either side, right? You see, when these type of things happen for the Houston Rockets, these things immediately, you know, devalue your asset. And James Harden being a player and a human being, but also being an asset as far as, you know, what he offers to other teams. And so when you do this, now all of a sudden the value goes down. Now he's still James Harden. He's still one of the top five players on the planet, best scorer on the planet. So his value is still sky high. But I don't know. There's just a level of unprofessionalism, I think, on James's side. You know, and there's a level of unprofessionalism on the Rockets side.
Well, I disagree with, I mean, listen, first of all, Richard Jefferson saying what I've said, like the longer they hold on to Harden, the more devalued he is. He loses value because he becomes an increasingly distressed asset. The rest of the league knows they got to deal him. So they don't have to really give them what they would like enough to pry him away from a reluctant team, right? But I disagree about the lack of professionalism. This is what the leverage the superstar has. The owners have the leverage where they can make a CBA that always favors them because they're the billionaires and they're negotiating with millionaires who have fewer reserves, right, in terms of stockpiles of cash. So the billionaires have the advantage. So they get a CBA favorable to them. What the superstar player has is this. He has the so-called unprofessional approach where he can say, oh, I'm just not going to show up. Or maybe I have an injury. I need to go in and get it taken care of, you know? Like, there's all kinds of stuff the superstar can do, and it won't feel very professional. But that's his leverage. 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. I'm going to get to calls, Raj. I keep threatening it, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do a whole segment of them. Because some people want to talk about Clippers locking up Paul George, and other people want... But anyway, they're going to get to Axe Max coming up.
Max, the podcast.
All right. By the way, Paul George signs a 5-year, $200 million extension with the Clippers. What could the Clippers do? They mortgaged their future to get Paul George. I guess they got to sign him, but this dude just goes away in the playoffs. Andy in New York City, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
How's it going, Max?
Go ahead, Andy.
By the way, we have Art Russ Jr. in common. I'll just throw that out there. But
Art Russ Jr. talking sports. Boy, that was a great show.
You got it. Well, I was a regular guest, as a matter of fact. By the way, the big mistake Clippers made was letting Kawhi play GM. They would have been better off having him join the existing roster with Shai Gilgeous and Gallinari.
No, but he wouldn't do it. Wait a minute. He refused to do that.
I know.
Okay, so you're the Clippers. You can continue to build with Shai Gilgeous Alexander, who was a good player, and Danilo Gallinari, who's a good player, and the core you have, or you can mortgage the future, get rid of Gilgeous Alexander and Gallinari, and get both Kawhi and Paul George. They came as a package deal. It's the only way to get Kawhi. I think you had to do it if you were the Clippers, especially when you look at what was going to happen with the Lakers. Not only did they already have LeBron and AD, Kawhi was going to the Lakers if the Clippers didn't get Paul George, and then it's over. That window of opportunity for the Clippers to take some portion of L.A. for themselves when the Lakers were terrible for a bunch of years, and the Clippers had Blake Griffin at his best and DeAndre Jordan at his best and obviously Chris Paul at his best, and it was Lob City. that window gone, and the Clippers didn't do anything. They had to do this. I don't think they had a choice. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Andy just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Dwayne in Ohio, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, I had two questions for you. Do you really think that Paul George is worth a $200-plus million? And my second question is, do you think that Kyrie's going to come back as good as he was before he got injured? Thank you.
I would say this. First, let's talk about Kyrie. Physically, yeah, I think Kyrie can physically be the same. It's not like an ACL. It's not like an Achilles or something like that KD had. But Kyrie's behavior over time is deteriorating. It's not getting better as he gets older. He was a losing player with the Cavs at first, although he was clearly fantastic. But he didn't, like, lead a team to a winning record, and it was in the lowly East. Then LeBron shows up with Kevin Love. They go to the finals, and they win a championship. But then Kyrie goes to Boston, and Boston functions better without him on the floor than with him. That's a proven fact. Look it up. When he got hurt, they did better. They were better in the playoffs without him. How's that possible? He's such a great player, Kyrie. And then the same thing in Brooklyn. Brooklyn's functioning better without Kyrie usually. So physically he'll be fine, I think, but what about the rest of it? That's the question. And then Paul George. Paul George, is he worth $200 million? I don't think there are that many players, considering there's a salary cap, who are actually worth a supermax. And I don't think Paul George is because of his struggles in the playoffs. On the other hand, don't throw bad money after good, or good money after bad, whatever the hell that expression is. But anyway, the point is, once you made the move for Paul George, what are you going to do? Let him walk out the door and you lost all those draft picks? No, you're going to sign him up, even if you think you're overpaying a little bit. And you hope you're going to sign Kawhi up, and then you hope you can put another piece with those guys that makes sense. By the way, the Ibaka pickup was a big one. Ibaka stretches the floor and plays defense, right? He's not just like an energetic power forward. He can also shoot and space the floor. They really need a point guard, though. Mitch in New Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Max, I wish the Clippers had kept Montrezl Harrell and Ibaka. But you think they can pull off a trade for James Harden? They need another superstar. The Lakers got better. I don't think they kept up with the Lakers.
I don't know if Harden works on the Clippers. I mean, you can run him. You can run the point using James Harden. Yeah, I suppose you would take James Harden on the Clippers if you could. Yeah, that would be an improvement. He could organize your offense at least. He'd have to play a little differently than he's used to, though. How do you go get him, though, if you're the Clippers? Your assets are all gone to get Paul George. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Dwayne just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. So I got to three calls, Raj. All right, I got to three calls. I'm going to get to some more. How do you like that? Have McVay and Goff solved Belichick's riddle?
Max, the podcast.